This is Robert Rogers from Parkinson's Recovery. I am currently in the clinic offices of Andrew Bentley, who is an herbalist, and it is my pleasure and delight to be able to interview him today. I want to first ask you just a bit about what is your background and how is it that you became to be an herbalist?
Well, my background is that I grew up in a family that and in an area where herbal medicine was used a lot, and got started learning about it that way. And then later I've traveled around the world and studied with different traditional healers in different places and tried to learn how different cultures use the medicinal plants that grow in their areas. And so I've been practicing since the mid-90s, and for the last 6 or 7 years I've also been doing some lecturing at the University of Kentucky Medical School, and published various different papers on herbal medicine in scholarly journals and things of that nature, and worked with lots and lots of patients.
Now, Lexington is a relatively large city compared to many other cities in Kentucky. Many people aren't going to know much about what an herbalist does. How many herbalists are there in Lexington, Kentucky?
I'm pretty much it as far as Lexington goes. I believe there's another clinical herbalist practicing in Louisville, and there are a few hundred of us throughout the country.
So for somebody who has no clue, what does an herbalist do for people?
Well, basically what I do is when someone comes in to see me or when I'm doing a phone consultation or whatever with someone, I get a lot of questions from I get a lot of information from them, ask them a lot of questions about both the specific issues that they're having and their general background, their health, their lifestyle, their diet, and so on. And what I try to do with all that information is I try to figure out which structures and functions in their body are working adequately and which ones are not. And based on that, I try to recommend herbs that will be helpful for that specific person in that specific situation to have those structures and functions working more appropriately.
So if I were to be talking with you today about some symptoms I am having, we would talk, you would ask me a lot of questions, and then you might have some recommendations of herbs that I might be taking. Would I then take a prescription and take it to a pharmacy, and that would be filled at the pharmacy, or how exactly does that work?
Well, like most herbalists, I have a dispensary here in my clinic because not all of the herbs I use are readily available. If it were, it would be possible to get them from a supplement store or a health food store or someplace like that that dealt in herbal medicines. But I try to keep everything that I use on hand here so that if I'm using something that's unusual, I can have it available for the person.
More specifically, you, I know, have seen individuals with Parkinson's. Could you talk some about your observations in dealing with individuals who have the symptoms of Parkinson's and how that works out from your perspective?
Sure. Well, because my perspective involves more, less focus on a specific named disease entity and more focus on what's actually going on with the person's body. So in people with these symptoms, what we're usually seeing is a problem with the nervous system, which can translate into various different things coming up in other systems in the body because the nervous system is kind of the one in charge, so to speak. What we've got here is problems with sometimes as a result of physical damage, sometimes as a result of drugs or other toxic substances, problems with the substantia nigra in the brain, problems with the production and uptake of dopamine in the nervous system, particularly in the central nervous system. And so my focus in terms of working with these individuals is to try and support the functioning of the nervous system and particularly the functions by which the dopamine channels work in the central nervous system.
And so people are always on the lookout for particular ways to do that or particular herbs that would support those kinds of systems. So what herbs in your past experience have been helpful for people who have central nervous system challenges?
Okay, well, there are certainly a lot of them, and exactly which ones are appropriate depends on a lot of things going on with the person, including what sort of events might have precipitated the start of the symptoms. For example, sometimes you'll see Parkinsonian-type situations that are a result of trauma. Other times it's maybe hereditary or we don't know where it came from. Maybe it's something that's come about as a slow process rather than something suddenly. But in all cases, there is more or less something amounting to physical damage in the nervous system. And so there are certain things that are fundamentally helpful with getting the nervous system to repair itself. One of the things that I use in that capacity is an herb called bacopa. And bacopa comes to us from the traditional medicine of India. And as such, it has a very long documented history of use for helping the nervous system repair itself. I use most of the herbs that I use as a liquid extract, and it's one that I use in that way. That can sometimes help. There are a few other herbs that help along those same lines that help with actually physically repairing the tissue in the nervous system. There are other ones that help to change the chemistry of the nervous system. A good example of that is, barley malt extract. It's a particular type of extract prepared from barley malt that contains a substance called hortonine, which has a very strong effect on the dopaminergic pathways in the brain. And then there are some other things that might help on a more symptomatic level or help more with the peripheral nervous system. Like, for example, oat straw extract, which helps to calm the tremors that most people have. Valerian can also be helpful in that capacity sometimes. So there are several different categories of herbs that help with different functions and different structures in the body and in the nervous system. And in each of those categories, there are many different herbs that might be different, might be helpful depending on the particular individual.
So as I understand it, it really depends on what the symptoms are that are presenting that would inform what herbs you would recommend the person consider begin taking. So if a person came in and had a dominant tremor, that would inform a certain set of herbs, or maybe just one dominant herb, versus if somebody came in with a dominant symptom of pain and, let's say, rigidity, that would inform a different recommendation of herbs. Do I understand that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It depends on the presenting symptoms as well as, to some extent, which category of herbs we're choosing depends on the presenting symptoms. Which herbs we're choosing from each category depends a lot on the body type of the particular person and sort of that person's constitution and makeup. So if someone has a lot of tremors, then something that's an antispasmodic might help more than if someone is experiencing a lot of pain and rigidity. So in which case we might use an entirely separate type of things. And then there are some things that are helpful more or less across the board. For example, the barley malt extract is one that actually helps with the levels of dopamine in the brain, which is something that is almost always amiss in Parkinson's disease because of the nature of the condition. And so that's something that is usually helpful. But it still depends a bit on the person and, of course, sometimes on what other therapies the person might be using. So, for example, if someone were taking dopamine or levodopa, I probably would not use that herb that might increase the amounts of those or decrease the clearance of those substances because then you start seeing things and so on, which is not really the goal. It depends on a lot of different things, but definitely the presenting symptoms are a very big factor in choosing which herbs to use.
So the bottom line is people who are decided to listen to this interview thinking that you were going to give them a particular list of herbs that they could take to feel better are not going to get that list because it really is idiosyncratic to the individual. It depends on exactly what's going on with the individual. I do have many, many people ask very specific questions since the symptoms for Parkinson's are so varied. For example, many people ask me a question about excessive salivation, and they have a lot of worries and troubles with that. Is there anything off the top of your head that would be suggested as a possibility in the herbal area for that?
Well, yeah, there are some things that might help with that. For example, oak bark extract taken in very small amounts can sometimes help with excessive salivation. Also, you know, sometimes if you have better muscle control in the muscles of the neck and throat and the face, that can sometimes help for the excessive salivation not to be a problem. And as far as the herbs go, although there's no one-size-fits-all list, I would definitely be glad to talk about specific herbs more and say, you know, which ones. We'll talk about some of the ones that I would use and under what circumstances they're helpful. You'd mentioned, for example, people with tremors, and I had mentioned oat straw as being one thing that sometimes is helpful for that. That's helpful. A nice thing about oat straw is that it doesn't usually cause drowsiness, and a lot of things that are antispasmodic also cause sedation, and sometimes people aren't looking for that. And so that's a helpful thing about that particular herb, is that it doesn't have so much of that effect. Valerian is a much stronger herb for helping to suppress tremors, but it does carry some risk of sedation, of, you know, feeling more drowsy and so forth, especially when people first start taking it. Sometimes that lessens as time goes on. But it's a very strong substance when it comes to helping control involuntary muscle movement, tremors, involuntary movement of otherwise voluntary muscles. So it's a good one for that. Passion flower is another one that's helpful for some particular individuals. Those are all things, for example, that would go into that category of working on tremors. Now, as far as rigidity goes, one of my favorite things for that is, there's an herb called artemisia, or sometimes it's called wormwood. But that is an herb which helps, basically helps the mechanism by which nerve impulses are transmitted in the body. And it's very good for rigidity of all sorts, including what sometimes accompanies Parkinson's. And so that's something that I use both as an extract, and then there's also a procedure that's done with it called moxibustion, in which we have these rolled up sticks of crushed artemisia leaf, which are lit and held near basically acupuncture points, and they affect the flow of energy in the body, and that can sometimes help with some of these same types of things, well, with tremors as well as rigidity, actually.
So what people can't see is you actually were holding that device for me, so I was able to see what it looked like. And when you're saying that you put that on various acupuncture points in the body, is this something that you do for people when they come to see you, or is this something that you teach people how to do for themselves?
Well, for the most part, I do use it as an office procedure, but there are most acupuncturists also use moxibustion is the name of the procedure, and people do it different ways, and sometimes I do teach people where specific points are, but which ones are helpful is different depending on what part of someone's body they're having trouble with and so forth. But there are certain meridians, certain lines on the body, on the face and on the arms and on the trunk of the body and on the legs that are relevant, and points within those meridians. And in the way that I use it, it's, you know, not actually applied to the skin. It's just held near the skin so that it warms it without actually burning the skin. Now, some people actually do practice a style of moxibustion where they blister the skin, but I don't do that because I think that it has some, well, for one thing, it hurts and people don't like it. But for another thing, there's also risks of infection and slow healing and so forth.
So this device looks a bit like a very large and long cigarette with a gold kind of a cap on one end, and then you light it at the other. So it does look like it would hurt if you actually applied it to the skin. Some people write me questions about depression who have the symptoms of Parkinson's. What would be the category of recommendations that you would consider for a person who presents that as a primary symptom?
Well, I think that the two are really closely related. You know, I think that the chemistry of depression and the chemistry of Parkinson's are very similar. They may involve, well, one involves serotonin and the other involves dopamine, but other than that, they're virtually identical. But one herb that I use a lot of is this St. John's wort, which is also known as hypericum. And that's something you can get at just about at every health food store. It works kind of slowly, but it does have a tendency to work pretty well a lot of the time. And basically, it does a number of things. One of the things that's been most researched that it does is that it helps to increase the amount of serotonin in the brain, which is good. But it also helps to clear toxins from the body, all sorts of different toxins and substances. And for some people with Parkinson's, that's very relevant. Some people, that herb will actually make a pretty big difference in how they're feeling from day to day. In other people, not so much. But it's a good first line herb for supporting the nervous system of someone who is depressed. There's also the artemisia, which I previously mentioned, is pretty strongly antidepressant as well when taken internally. And so the wormwood, that is. And so that's another one that I might sometimes use in that situation. So, you know, depression can it takes a lot of different forms in a lot of different people as well. But those are some of the most common things that I use, some of the things I use most frequently.
So after a person sees you and you provide them with the herbs that occur to you would be helpful, you give, I guess, specific recommendations on how much of that herb to take. So one teaspoon, one drop, or one whatever. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And the amounts that I use tend to be quite a bit higher than what would be larger amounts than what are usually recommended on if you go and buy a bottle of the stuff from the health food store. But then again, it's, you know, more under a professional supervision, and so there's a little more control and more ability to look out for things that might not be desired outcomes. But I give people recommendations on how to how much to take and when to take it, and then usually follow up with the person in about a week or so and see, you know, what's changed, if anything has changed that quickly. You know, at that point, a lot of what I'm trying to see is, are they tolerating the treatment? And then a couple weeks down the road, we can get a clearer picture of whether the treatment is working well. Some of the time. Now with certain herbs, like the barley malt extract, I've definitely had, you know, times when people came in a wheelchair and were able to walk out because it makes a big difference pretty quickly in how their nervous system is functioning. And so that's, you know, it can be the difference between having a good day and having a bad day, or having a lot of good days and having a lot of bad days.
So in the process of working with clients, it is in part, it sounds like, a question of experimentation. You start with a particular set of prescriptions with one or several herbs, and then the person takes it and then comes back with reports on how they're doing, and then there's follow-up with perhaps some adjustments of those as a function of how their symptoms have shifted. Is that right?
Yeah, that's basically right. You know, sometimes I wish I was smart enough to always get it right the first time, but I'm not, and I don't think anyone else is either. So there's definitely some room for trying it out and seeing what works with a particular person. And if one thing's not, maybe it's not strong enough, or maybe it's producing some other, outcome that we don't want. Like, for example, I'd mentioned that drowsiness can be produced by some of the same things that reduce tremors. So we look out for those kind of things and try to adjust. Sometimes you have to adjust the dosages. Sometimes you have to adjust exactly what the person is taking and so on. And it's work. It's a process that sometimes takes some time. And, sometimes it's possible to get everything right away, but often it takes a bit of working with it. But usually from the first, people can tell that something is going on, even if it's not exactly the outcome they want.
Parkinson's recovery is all about hope, is giving people hope that it is possible for them to get some relief from their symptoms. And you've given a few hints that one of the reasons I'm here talking with you today in your clinic is that the work that you've done with people who have Parkinson's is providing relief from their symptoms. Could you talk some about your experience with people who have the symptoms of Parkinson's and how these herbs have helped them?
Sure. Usually what I see is some fairly immediate reduction of symptoms. Sometimes people are able to get where they're more or less symptom-free or have a very, very livable amount of symptoms. And sometimes people are able to get where they, don't have any appreciable symptoms at all and maybe are even able to stop taking the herbs sometimes. There is, I believe, the actual potential for healing, for the body to actually get itself back into the state that it's supposed to be in, rather than just relying on supplementation and on things to keep it going. But that can be different from one person to the next, certainly. Strangely enough, it's not always real closely related to how bad their symptoms are in the first place. I mentioned in talking about the barley malt extract, the hordenine, that I have seen people, go from not being able to walk because they're having very severe tremors and rigidity and so forth to being able to in a fairly short amount of time. And so that's, that represents a very immense change in quality of life. And that's really what I'm mostly going for, is change in quality of life. I'm not at all concerned with, figures and numbers and test results. I'm really concerned with the subjective reports of, how are you feeling and is it better than it was before we started this? So that tends to be what I work towards.
So it sounds like of the people with Parkinson's that you've seen, the results are indeed encouraging, that people are seeing relief from their symptoms. But it sounds like also you even offer more hope that there are people who've become virtually symptom-free, maybe not totally, but basically virtually symptom-free. Now, do I understand that correctly? Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's what I said. Now, certainly that is an atypical result. I'm not going to promise that happens for everybody by any means, but I think a lot of it has to do with how determined people are and how hard they work towards it, and what steps they're willing to take. Certainly most of the people that I've seen have the best success have used a variety of different treatments, not just what I'm doing, but also maybe conventional treatment and what I'm doing and acupuncture, and there are various other things that people do. And I think that there's definitely room for all of them to work together in a single person's body. So yes, sometimes I have seen results that were really, really good, and that's of course what everybody wants to see.
You're a very modest man, and basically what you're reporting is that many of the people who are seeing significant improvement in their symptoms are seeing other people and doing other things, and so you're not able to attribute the actual work of the herbs exclusively as the primary cause of their getting better. But the fact is that the herbs clearly are playing a role as well. So that's incredibly hopeful, especially in a situation where many people who get the symptoms of Parkinson's believe that they're always going to get worse. What you're saying is, no, no, that's not true in your experience. What about, though, the question of the people who come to see you and they're prescribed some herbs and begin to take them? Do people get worse that you've seen or that you've had as patients?
Yeah, I have seen people get worse. So far, I don't think I've had anybody that I've worked with where we weren't able to turn that around. I mean, I have definitely seen, I mean, it is the normal course of the condition to get worse in a lot of cases. And sometimes that still is happening, but my goal is always to sort of halt and reverse that downward progress. I believe that really what the herbs do is they facilitate or they make room for the process of healing that is built into the body. And, years ago, people used to say that damage to the central nervous system is permanent, period. There's no way that this tissue can ever regenerate if it's damaged, that if it's in a bad state, there's no way that it's ever going to be to get better. And that's antiquated information at this point. We now know that's not always the case. And we've, of course, always had stories of people where that didn't happen to be the case. But it's now pretty well accepted in the world of physiology that central nervous tissue can regenerate itself even in an adult, but that it often doesn't. And so my goal in terms of that is to try and facilitate that healing process that is really an innate part of what the body is supposed to do, and just basically give the body the tools, the nourishment, the substances that it needs to do that process of healing.
So as I understand it, what you're saying is that the body knows how to heal itself and the herbs are facilitating that innate wisdom. Is that right?
Yes, that's my experience and my interpretation of what's going on.
Now, I'm sitting here with Andrew, and behind him are three rows of many, many bottles of herbs and various concoctions. And it's very clear that these bottles were not purchased at the supermarket down the street. So could you say something about where all of these exotic-looking herbs come from?
Yeah, they all come from... Most of them are wild. For the most part, I use things that grow in the wild because they have to be strong. They have to contain the substances that they contain in strong amounts to be able to survive. So most of what I have is stuff that I gather from the wild. A small percentage of it is stuff that I have grown for me by organic farmers. That would apply to the things that won't grow in the environment I live in. So I have some things, for example, that are grown, like this frankincense here that is grown in the Arabian Peninsula on an organic farm. And I buy it from the people who grow it rather than, trying to grow a frankincense tree in Kentucky, which won't work. So for the most part, they're wild, and the ones that aren't wild are organically grown because I want to make sure that there's no, not even the faintest trace of contamination in them. And I like to make sure that I know where every bit of medicine that I give to my patients has been from the time that it was a seed growing until the time that it's a finished product that I'm handing to them.
What an amazing answer. So as I understand it, when you say they grow in the wild, you actually go to places and identify the plants and harvest the plants yourself. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah. Most of them I harvest myself. Some of them I do have other people who do some harvesting for me. People that I know that I can trust. And of course, once I get the plant, I'm able to look at it both microscopically and visually and make sure that it is exactly what I want it to be and that it's, a good specimen of what I want it to be and that it's not something that's sat on a shelf for years or something like that.
We have many people who are listening and reading this interview who live far distant from Kentucky, some many people in many other countries. how would they be able to get assistance from you? Can they get a phone consultation from you and get some help in that way?
Yeah, I can do phone consultations. It's always better if I have the person in front of me because I can actually look at them and so forth. But, actually examine somebody and I can get some more information that way. So if people can make the trip, I think that that's better. But obviously that's not an option for everybody. And so I think that, it's good to do the phone consultations also. And I am available for that. And I can ship these herbs pretty much anywhere in the world. And I have patients all over the place that I do that with sometimes. And so that's definitely a possibility. And there are, there may be other, I may be able to refer someone to a local herbalist that is good. There are certainly all quality of herbalists out there in the world, but there are some very good ones in a lot of places that people could get this similar advantages from working with.
What's the phone number that people can reach you at?
My phone number is 859-420-5648. And I can also work with people by email, and my email address is bentley@consultant.com.
And so is there a website?
Well, I have a MySpace page that I put all my writings about herbal medicine and so forth on, and that is at myspace.com/kyherbalist.
You mentioned you'd be happy to help people with connecting up with an herbalist in their area. Is there some listing of herbalists or some association that would have lists of individuals that have your similar training?
Unfortunately, no. There's not at this point. Hopefully that situation will be remedied in the future, though.
One specific herb that I don't think you have mentioned, but many people are interested in, is called macuna, and many people have been acquiring that from places in India as a dopamine supplement. Do you have any experience with that particular herb?
Yeah, a little bit. I have worked with some people that have been using it. I personally don't really have a source for it at present, so I haven't been using it. But I think that in terms of how it works, that it's fairly similar. In terms of outcome, at least, to the hordenine or to the lophophora, the peyote cactus, which is sometimes used. I use the barley malt for something similar as far as raising the amount of dopamine in the central nervous system, because it's something that's very easy to produce, and doesn't rely on anything exotic. It's basically just barley, but the barley is sprouted and then prepared in a certain way. But the macuna or the lophophora have similar outcomes in terms of what they do to the chemistry of the central nervous system.
You mentioned the barley malt several times. Is that a substance that people might be able to find in health food stores?
Not that I'm aware of, actually. It's a traditional remedy that goes back to ancient Greece, probably older than that, but they were some of the first people that wrote their experiences with it down, at least. I'm not aware of it actually being sold as a supplement. I think one reason for that is the fact that if you took too much of it, it would cause hallucinations and disorientation, things like that, which is, it's pretty self-limiting. I mean, you wouldn't want it to happen while you were driving or operating heavy machinery or anything like that, but it's not physiologically dangerous, but it's I don't think very many manufacturers would be willing to just put that on the shelves at the health food store because of the potential for liability when someone decides that they're going to take the whole bottle of it and has a bad experience.
So everything that we've really talked about are herbals, and they do not require, certainly in Kentucky, but I suppose in most states or countries, a prescription from a medical doctor. Is that correct?
That's right. In the United States, herbal medicines are regulated as dietary supplements, which means that they're not considered food or drugs. They're sort of an in-between category. There are manufacturing practices in place now, but there's not really the same, not quite the same amount of free market testing required that there is of drugs, for instance. So there is that issue. And of course, you know, sometimes quality control can be an issue, which is why I have, you know, my own dispensary here. But that's something that has improved by leaps and bounds over recent years. But then again, some of the things that I've mentioned, particularly the barley malt, is not really readily available as a supplement, as far as I'm aware of.
So some of these herbs do have side effects, and it's important then for a person who wants to pursue this for themselves to consult with somebody such as yourself, who's an expert on what the herb can do for them and also on possible side effects.
That's right, and that's especially true if someone is already taking prescription drugs that it might interact with, or there are cases where an herb and a drug with similar activities will counteract each other and basically amount to nothing. And there are instances where the two of them might do more than what's desired in any given direction if taken together. And then there are certainly things that can happen, things to look out for with particular herbs that might mean you're getting too much, because everyone's level of dosage that their body will tolerate and that their body will respond to is a little bit different with herbs as with any other substance.
This has been a fascinating discussion, I want you to know, Andrew. I feel like I've searched all over the country for you and finally found you. It's obvious that your skills, your abilities, your talents, and your revelations with regard to what really helps people with the symptoms of Parkinson's are remarkable. So I want to thank you for providing your expertise and your knowledge and your insights and your advice to people with regard to herbals that might be used to help with the symptoms of Parkinson's. And also let you know that we have a teleseminar series where we invite guests in, where people can ask questions that they have about various herbs. Could I twist your arm and encourage you to do a teleseminar with me for people with Parkinson's at some point here in the near future?
Yeah, I would be glad to have the opportunity to do that.
Thank you so much. And I want to say thank you so much for doing the interview. This has been absolutely, totally amazing. Thanks so much.